And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. Late night, Sunday night. Things have just wrapped up at the Sony Open in Hawaii. Congratulations to Matt Kuchar. Ninth career win. Second victory of the young season. We will get into that and many of the more takeaways from Kyle Porter as we bring him on. Kyle, how are we doing Sunday night?
I'm good. Here was my biggest takeaway from the Sony Open. We can just end the podcast after this. That'll be it. I did not see the Sony Open starting with Ed Reed and ending with a quote from Jay-Z.
Oh, that and is- he misquoted him. Listen, no, Matt Kuchar tried to drop a lyric from Jay-Z's just sort of like Kingdom Come. It was released in 2006, and it is, in my own humble opinion, like the bottom. I guess the Jay-Z R. Kelly is now the bottom, especially now as we're revisiting R. Kelly. But like, I would even put Volume 3, Life in the Times of S. Dot Carter, ahead of Kingdom Come. But he's got a song on there called 30 is the New 20. And so Matt Kuchar
said 40.
Yes.
Not good.
No, but very Matt Kuchar to try and pull out a Jay-Z lyric and mess it up.
Yeah, it's honestly the most on-brand thing ever for Matt Kuchar to misquote Jay-Z and like slap Todd Lewis on the back as he's doing it. And like it was like the apex of dad jokes on television, on like in recorded television history.
Right. And Matt Kuchar even said, I hope that's the lyric, because he almost like he knew in his mind that he might have misstepped on that one.
I looked over at my wife as it happened. I said, hey, 3,000 might be the new 130,000.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wait, what does that mean?
It's the... Oh, I didn't know if you wanted to get into it. The tipping...
The tipping story. Yes, I do. Oh, yes. All right. So will you at least take us through the facts of this? Because I feel like I'm a little bit more interested. I don't want to mess those up. And I'm a little bit more interested in sort of the way it played out and the reaction.
Yeah, so apparently, and this is a little, I don't know, I was off a little bit this weekend, and so I caught snippets of it, but apparently a player went on Twitter and kind of joked that he hoped that if Kuchar won the Sony Open, he would give his caddy, John Wood, a better payout than he gave his caddy when he won in Mayakoba back in the fall. Well, John Wood was off that week. He wasn't working. So Kuchar picked up a local caddy at that event. And apparently, according to, I think the player's name is Tom Gillis on Twitter, he said he only gave him $3,000 after winning $1.3 million at the Mayakoba event.
Right.
And so other people kind of chimed in, and it just, I don't know. I've got several takes from several angles on this, and I know you do as well. I don't love players doing stuff like that. Not necessarily because I don't know. It just felt weird, and I don't love players being reporters. It would be like if I went out and tried to play golf, and I don't know. Just the whole thing just feels weird, and it's a strange deal. It's not a great look if it's true. I mean, it's a terrible look if it's true, but I don't know. I want more of the story, you know, and Kuchar was given an opportunity to respond to the tweet, to the information. And his quote wasn't a great look either. He said, I didn't give him 10%, which is standard for like your normal caddy, which I don't think anybody would have expected for him to give him a whole 10%. He goes, but I also didn't give him $3,000. And that was the whole quote. And it's like, well, I don't know what to do with that, man, because you're not giving me a lot to work with. So well, I don't know. What was your take?
I felt like we were operating from a point because based on what limited worldview I have of the golf fandom, it kind of felt like Kuchar was getting roasted, right? Especially it stands in opposite of the like nice guy mentality and all these other things. Like there was some big time like pitchforks, like let's get out here and let's skewer Kuchar, let's drag him out here. And then it starts to branch into this next part, which I hinted at a little bit before we started recording, which is that I don't think that as much of the golf fan, I don't think as many golf fans have had the experience of tipping a looper or a caddy themselves. And I think that when you start to jump into some of the like specifics, and granted, there's another level. Like, we're talking about a professional, and that's where you throw out the 10% industry standard, a professional and the money that they win in a caddy. But still, even in general, I just think that there is, like, to me, like, I've played like rounds at Pinehurst. I've played rounds up in the mountains of North Carolina. Like, I've played some very nice courses, but I play as much golf as I can. I've never played with the caddy. I just don't have that experience. And so it just felt so unrelatable that it touched into that exclusivity that sometimes can be a little bit of a hindrance, because, you know, whether he got paid enough or it isn't, we're still like, I see a $3,000 tip and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of money. Especially if you were just a local kid who just got picked up. And I don't defend Kuchar, but I just don't have enough of a, I don't have enough of a connection to the act of paying someone to carry your bags and give you help around the course. And so because of that, it just all felt very far away from me. And it felt like one of those situations that I experienced a lot covering college sports, which is a bunch of adults wondering why in the world those 19-year-olds don't have their head together.
Like, I mean, it is such an easy story to like jump on either side of, and yeah, I don't know. I think that people, when they see stuff like this, it's so easy to just be like so just angry and like,
and grill the millionaire.
Yeah, and like I'm not. It's hard. I say I'm not defending Kuchar. I don't even know what there is to defend. I don't know what happened, and I don't think anybody really does. And so, sure, I got on Twitter and made a joke about it, and I think everybody's doing that. And that's unfortunate for Kuchar if it's not true. But here's the thing that I was thinking about, Chip. I don't feel like stuff like this gets made up. Now, are the exact numbers right? I have no idea. But this isn't something that people don't just sit around. Other golfers don't just sit around and say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make up a story about Matt Kuchar and tipping today. Like, that, it just doesn't happen. Like, there's no feasible reason that would ever happen. And so, to me, there's some thread in there that is going to get pulled out that somebody's going to pull out, and it's going to be the reality. I just don't know what it is. And so I'm hesitant to go all in on some sort of take.
But that's why I would wonder aloud, you know, and as we're using minutes of this podcast for, but that's why I wonder aloud about how much it matters. So he's cheap. It? Yeah. So what? Charles Barkley threw a journalist through a window.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's just if he was cheap and if he stiffed him, then we will make our judgments on Matt Kuchar. And obviously he has gone on with his life and he is playing great golf and he looks like he's set himself up to be right in the mix of any, you know, major event with two wins already in the young season. But, you know, what are you gonna do? You're gonna heckle him on the course now? You're gonna not yell Kuch? You're gonna not get excited if all of a sudden he starts to buck his head a little bit at the Open in July? Like, I don't think that this one would be my breaking point with Matt Kuchar.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the hard thing about this is when you are someone who is has sponsorships and people. I mean, so much of the reason that we root for people in sports is because of image, who we believe them to be, who we think they are. And while all of that can be such a fallacy and such silliness, I do think it's if you're purporting to be one person over here and you're getting sponsorships and all these things because of it, but you're actually not that person, then I do feel like there's a little bit of a, I don't know. I feel like there isn't there. I feel like there's an issue there. Like, I feel like there is a problem there. Now, again, I hate going too deep into this because all of it remains semi-hypothetical because we don't totally know what happened. But I don't think that who you are.
Do you think that Matt Kuchar advertises himself as good guy, or do you think Matt Kuchar advertises himself as one of the 15 to 20 most relevant American golfers on the PGA Tour? Because I think he can say results speak for themselves. I don't think he has to sell himself as a nice guy. I think we do more of that than he does.
That's fair. But I also think that you get into this thing as a professional athlete where you kind of know what your brand is. Like, I think he knows that his brand is saying golly shucks off the tee when he hits a bad shot. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's just oblivious to all that. I doubt it. Those guys are smart. They know what's going on. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's not good if it happened. And if it didn't, then it, or if some other form of it happened, then it's another lesson in like, hey, let's maybe not take everything on Twitter and blow it up into the truth or exactly what happened right off the top. Let's figure some stuff out. And you know, I've been thinking about this and reading about that. Do you ever read or listen to Ezra Klein?
I read him, yes.
So he's talked a lot about like the friction of publishing recently, like how Twitter is frictionless. Like you can just fire stuff off. Like right. There's no friction there. There's no system there to like vet information or anything. And I feel like that is, it's fun. It's great. Twitter's great for a myriad things. It's probably the reason that I have my job and that a lot of people have their jobs, but it does get a little, I just wish people wouldn't. And again, I'm saying this to someone who made a joke about this last night, but I wish people wouldn't like just take everything as 100% solid right off the top, because I feel like there's real long-term damage to people's reputations and things like that if you're doing that.
Okay, so let's assume that it's true, or that it's at least close to true. Take me, someone who is not as close to the player and the team and the makeup around the group that surrounds a PGA Tour player or a professional golfer right now. Would it be some kind of cardinal sin what he has done here? Like, has he stepped past all the unwritten rules of baseball and broken them all by shorting a local caddy that he has picked up and is not contractually obligated to otherwise?
I mean, it's pretty bad.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's because I think that there's this, and I don't know, I've never played professional golf. I don't play very well as a amateur. I play 10 times a year, 20 times a year, whatever. But I do feel like there's a sense that when you're playing, like it's just a, I don't know how to explain it, but there's this underlying, like you said, unwritten rule that like, hey, this guy carried your bag, he helped you out. And I've played with caddies before, and if you play well, you tip them better. That's just sort of that. I think that's the unwritten rule. And so it's almost like $3,000 would have been like if you finished T-55 or something. And it's like, no, you won the tournament. Like, just give the guy not 0.3% of your earnings. I do feel like it's almost like I don't get super caught up in like the playing with integrity. It's the only game that it's like, okay, well, guys cheat all the time, so let's not like freak out about that. But I do feel like it's one of these unwritten rules of golf that people just have followed over the years, and that is considered is considered an important thing and a big deal in a lot of circles.
All right, we will get into the actual golf coming up right after this.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so for all that, Matt Kuchar did play one heck of a week of golf. And yeah. and is, I mean, what, number one in the way too early FedEx Cup at this point, up with there with Xander Schauffele. No, I mean, he's got the two wins on the season. That's going to help him. But he's he's very, very confident. Game seems to be in good place. He had that comment. So I guess you also saw the post-round thing. He said he is not, in any of his nine career wins, he hasn't carried a cushion like that up the 18th. So it seems like he really got to enjoy it. While the internet might have been roasting him for his tipping skills, Matt Kuchar seemed to be having himself a ball in Hawaii this week.
Yeah, he played great. I thought it was almost, his win was almost Tiger-like. And what I mean by that is there's certain, and we've talked about this a lot, Chip, but there's certain rhythms to the way that guys win. So he goes out 63-63, and then he shoots 66-66 on the weekend. And it's a very low stress way to win, because on Thursday and Friday at these events, I think something that people who, if you don't go to a lot of them, you don't realize how, even at majors, it's pretty laid back
very,
on Thursday and Friday.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's just not, there's not the tension of a Saturday, Sunday. And so when you get that tension, you don't want to be up one, you want to be up three or four. And for most of the event, other than the back nine on, or excuse me, other than the front nine on Sunday, he had a sizable lead. He was very much in cruise control. And yeah, he needed to make a few birdies late. The 30 on the back nine was impressive. He didn't need to shoot 30 on the back nine, but I think it became easy to do so once he regained that bigger lead by making birdie at 15 and 16.
Andrew Putnam holds the lead for a little bit. You know, you look up and down the rest of those final groups, we had like superstars of Matt Kuchar's equal or you know, even more in terms of star power, Bryson DeChambeau up there. But also just a lot of regular old Kyle Porters and Chip Pattersons out there.
I know. I was watching with my wife, and she was like,
"Who's
I don't
that?
Even know. Who are these guys? I don't even know them."
Oh yeah, Leishman was up there too. But you know, Corey
Reve.
Yeah, Corey Connors was up there. Hudson Swafford, Andrew Putnam, were you surprised at all? Because this was a group with a lot of star power in terms of the field coming in. Jordan Spieth misses the cut. Were you surprised at all at the way that we saw some of the stars sort of fall back, and then all of a sudden these other golfers sort of emerged to the top of the leaderboard as the tournament went on late?
Yeah, I was surprised that one of the, five or six, big dogs in the event wasn't up there. That we didn't get a JT, we didn't get a Bryson, maybe I wasn't surprised about Spieth, but we didn't get a Bubba. I mean, we didn't get anybody like that. It was, and you know, this is not an event that produces, I would say, elite winners. It produces some solid winners, but, you know, we got JT a couple years ago. But it doesn't normally produce like huge names as winners. So I wasn't stunned, but I was surprised that none of those guys were really around the lead at all.
What about for Spieth in particular?
I heard a lot of disconcerting things this week.
Really?
A lot of disconcerting things from him, not from other people. I mean, I don't know how much of his quotes you were able to see, but I read his press conference transcript. I read both days of transcripts after he played, and there was a lot of quotes that I got done reading and just eyebrows raised. Like, what? Like, is this? I had to double check the name. Is this Jordan Spieth?
Because no confidence. I mean, is he lost?
It feels like he's lost. Okay. So here was one after he missed the cut. So he shot 73 on Thursday, 66 on Friday. He said, "For not playing well at all and being on the bad end of the draw, to miss the cut by one is reassuring." Okay. "I also love the way we fought back there at the end. That was fun. I felt like I was trying to win a golf tournament just to make the cut, which is not really something I want to get used to. But early in the season, when I started the day 17 shots back, it was something where I could actually feel some pressure and make adjustments too." It sounds like somebody coming back from injury.
Yeah.
And they're trying to like get back into the rhythm. And I don't know. I asked our editors to change my prediction of Jordan Spieth winning three times in 2019. Just go back and change the internet. Change the post.
Well, don't actually get caught doing that, because they'll go back in the old internet archives and they'll reveal it. Have I ever told you the time about like when writers have gotten exposed for changing old articles?
It's not good.
It's happened at CBS.
Really?
Yeah.
What can you reveal what it was?
No, not on the podcast or the person, okay. But that it was one of those situations where someone was really excited about, and I, the way that I understand it, it was not done with like necessarily evil or malevolent intentions, but it was just that like, oh, you're right, the internet can't always be edited. Oh, like like I, you know, this paragraph might sound better written like this, and so that just started making some adjustments. And
there is no take, no prediction that is worth changing to that would match like the level of blowback you would get if you got caught.
Right.
Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing. No way.
There's not like 100 of them combined.
Right.
But no, I mean, in terms of Spieth, I'm not going to lose my mind over two rounds. I didn't love the things that I was he sounded like somebody who was trying to convince himself that he wasn't wandering in the desert, and it feels like he is a little bit, but who knows. I'll go down swinging with my prediction that he'll win three times in 2019. I didn't feel great about the way he was talking this week.
When you're talking about having to like motivate yourself, if you're having to play motivation games, and that's, you know, your lingering thought after missing the cut at the Sony Open, then you're not in a great space.
Yeah, and part of that is like he's already in his head too much as it is, and part of this is like the Rory deal, right? He's almost too self-aware, he's almost too introspective, too smart, It's like the anti-DJ. It gets him in trouble a little bit. And so I appreciate it because he's a great quote, and I think he's thoughtful, and I think he's interesting. But I think it works against him a little bit on the golf course.
So it wasn't a total no-show from Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas finishes T16. I think he shot 4-under today, I guess.
Yeah.
69, 68, something like that. Where do you think the inability to go low and to chase some of the players that were near the top of the leaderboard, where did JT fall short?
Yeah, I looked at his numbers. He was hold on, I've got him right here. He was strokes gained from tee to green on the week. He was 12th, so he was solid tee to green. Approach shots, he was 6th. He just struggled around the green and with the putter. So I just don't even react to that. It's just so not worth it. It just changes from week to week. So he's hitting the ball great. I thought it was interesting. He had two top 20 finishes. He finished 3rd at the Tournament of Champions, 16th at the Sony, which sounds like a pretty solid couple of weeks, right?
Right.
And he still finished like 17 strokes away from winning both of those tournaments combined. So it's tough at the top, man. But I thought he had a pretty good 2 week stretch. Nothing about what he did in Hawaii changes the way that I feel about him right now.
What about from the Sony Open in particular? Who stood out to you, either good or bad?
How about Davis Love III?
Hey, when you're out there and living the good life, those old bones can feel real young.
He beat we were gonna do this later, but I'll just do it right now. One thing I loved about the event: Davis Love beat Bryson, JT, Reed, Spieth, Bubba, and Poulter, all people that played in the Ryder Cup where he was the vice captain, and 4 of whom he's 30 years older than. It's unbelievable. I mean, he shot a 63 on Saturday. It's crazy.
Crazy.
And you know, it's interesting because this is a course where somebody like that can, like, he can do that. His game is good enough to play a short course like that. And I think that's great. I wish that there were more short. I don't know if like Wailea is the prototype for what I want, but I love the idea of short courses kind of making you hit the best golf shots and not necessarily seeing who's just the longest off the tee.
Because normally, how many stops on the PGA Tour do you think you get where that is the case?
Yeah, there's like five. It's like here, it's like Colonial, it's RBC Heritage. You know, these are like the 7,000.
Is that Hilton Head?
Yeah, Hilton Head. Yeah. These are like the 7,000 yard courses. And again, like not all of them are elite courses, but like somewhere like Colonial, you gotta hit some irons, you gotta hit some golf shots, and it's not like Firestone.
Driver wedge.
I think that stinks, man. I do. I think it stinks, and look, Rory said this to me, and I agree. Distance and driving is a skill, and it is, but that doesn't mean I necessarily have to want to see that in a 90 yard wedge every hole. I think that's dumb.
I like
one of my takeaways, I like this course. You know, it's not the greatest course, but it's kind of quirky and fun and good, and I enjoyed watching it.
All right. So let's see. You call him Shea Reve. I know he's Reevy. so from the house, Reevy, pretty strong performance.
Yeah. Did you see what he did on Friday
with the holeouts?
He holes out from 101, 129, I think, and 145. The first time somebody said three eagles on par fours in the same round in recorded PGA Tour history. It's crazy.
He shot 66 today.
Yeah, something like that. He was kind of in it, but not really.
That was one thing. Like this
67.
This tournament had a lot of as everyone's wrapping up. You're like, man, just really good week for him. Man, just really good week for him, because they were in threesomes too. So you're kind of like you're closing the book on a lot of rounds really, really quickly. And all these guys are three strokes shy of Kuchar.
Yeah, I know. It is interesting.
It's hard to win.
Well, and you think about, I mean, how much does it mean for somebody like Corey Connors to get a T3 here early in the year?
Oh, huge.
That's what I'm always thinking about is these guys. You're kind of, because I'm sort of watching the winner at the end or the two or three guys that are in contention. But the broadcast is showing the Sung Kangs, the Sebastian Munozes, the Brian Stewards who are finishing up. And all I'm thinking about as they're finishing up is like, man, I bet he feels so good about that week because he finished T8, he finished T7. He gets, you know, that a week like that is such a, it goes such a long way toward trying to get in the top 125 and retain your card. And so you and I focus on, again, the nine guys that matter. But I mean, that's such a huge deal in the lives of those guys for the future of their PGA Tour cards and things like that.
No doubt. And I'm glad you mentioned it. Anything else?
Primetime golf. What's your opinion? In or out?
Out.
Because we're recording a podcast at 11:10 Eastern.
I mean, well, yes, but that's just sort of built into the general, like when I'm, you know, when I'm negotiating my golf coverage, especially in like the thick of the golf season, and it's come after college football and college basketball, the sell of, oh, but it's only going to be during the day is a little bit nice, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Like,
that's fair.
It's always been like, look, just let me, when the sun goes down, you know, we'll wrap up the live blog, we'll turn in whatever we need to turn in, and then we can still go grab late dinner, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not at Augusta. I don't get the tap for that quite yet. So like there've been a lot of April, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays that have been like, baby, just like 10 more minutes. Okay. They're almost in.
Brian Stewart's finishing up.
Yeah. I just need this putt to go down. I'm hitting submit and we're good. So
how angry do you get when you've written something as if the person makes the putt and then they miss it?
Not as angry as I've been for having to write like a pre-written thing, and then pre-written thing for Auburn beats LSU, go down to the field and LSU storms back and beats Auburn with a game-winning field goal, and you're like, well,
there needs to be here's my, we can end on this. This is my media thought for 2019, my media opinion. There needs to be some sort of way, some sort of area on the field at these games where you can bring your stuff, because that it's so crazy to have to leave your computer and everything up in the press box. And
I take it with me now.
Do you?
Yeah, throw it in the book bag.
Yeah, that's probably the way to go. But there's, you still are like walking around trying to type with one. I mean, it's just not a great setup.
No, and it's a total shit show. But like that's that. That was definitely the play at the Orange Bowl. I was like, no, I'm going to pack up everything. And if I have to write like sitting on the floor outside of a locker room, then
yeah,
I guess that's what I'm going to do. But there's just too much up and down movement. I needed to become more mobile.
Yeah, for sure. This is the most first world of first world problems that nobody wants to hear about. But hey,
you started by asking if I was down with primetime golf. Golf does a great job of eating up hours during the daytime. I think I'm cool leaving it there.
I agree. I like the primetime every once in a while, just because like today I started my work day at, you know, 3:30 or 4 or whatever, and I got to spend all day with the kids, and then at night when I'm working like when they're in bed. And so it's a great setup. I don't know if my wife would agree, but it's a great setup for me.
New True Detective came on, man. Your wife was trying to watch something else.
Oh, she loves the murder mysteries. She's she probably is like helping produce season 3 of Making a Murder. She's all in.
She's dialed in. She's actually doing the background research. Hey, as long as you get an associate producer credit, you can make money on that forever. That's called the retirement plan, baby. Let's go.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Sony Open was fun. We got the No Name tournament next week, the Desert Classic.
Not the tournament that is the Waste Management. That is still existing in its normal time, right?
Yeah, that's Super Bowl week. So okay. Desert Classic used to be the Humana, used to be the, I don't know, the Bill Clinton was involved. It's been everything. It used to be the Bob Hope. That's what everybody calls it. Palm Springs. Phil will be there. Should be fun. It'll be kind of like this field. Not, you know, good, not great. But then after that, we got Torrey Pines, Tiger back. Get the live blog fingers ready.
Yeah. Hold on. So are you going to be at the, Are you going to be back for Saturday and Sunday of the Farmers?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But you'll be in Orlando for Thursday, Friday?
Yeah, I'll be at the PGA Merchandise Show that week and then come back Friday afternoon or something.
All right. Are you going to have camera with you too?
Yeah.
Doing interviews, CBS Sports HQ through and through?
Yeah. I think we got Jim Nantz. Is that public? Can I say that publicly? Are we still on? Is anybody listening?
We are still on. And I don't think Jim Nantz is listening. But maybe that's the real secret about the leaving the podcast going, is that Kyle just lets spoilers fly.
I got some other stuff I'll tell you off air.
Okay. Anyway. Desert Classic coming up. We will be sure to be taking a look ahead. Again, congratulations to Matt Kuchar, because whether he did or did not tip $3,000 back last fall, I can say that that is a golfer who seems to have his game in a good place right now. True?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, he's, Matt Kuchar's playing some good Matt Kuchar golf right now. And so I think that is going to be an exciting thing to follow as he, you know, he doesn't always necessarily count for our dozen that matter, but he's certainly one, a name and a character that reverberates throughout, I think, a lot of the listening audience. So should be a lot of fun.
And he could have, I mean, this could be a career year for him. The best year he's ever had was probably 13. He won a WGC and the Memorial, and he won like 5.6 mil. And so he's, you know, he's already won twice. If he picks up another one, it's probably his the best year of his career. So pretty cool to you know, it's January 13th and he's already got two wins on the season. So he's got to be feeling good about what the rest of 2019 holds.
Absolutely. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.